Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the HR Room Podcast. In today's episode, we're discussing the topic of ageism. Earlier this year, the Irish Times reported that almost 90% of workers over 55 believe age is an issue when seeking employment. So today we're going to take a deeper look at this topic. To talk about today's topic, we're delighted to be joined by the wonderful Melanie Steinhardt, Corporate Partnerships and Philanthropy Manager at Age Action Ireland, a non-profit organisation focused on age equality and helping to build a society that values all of us as we age. Thanks for joining us, Melanie. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me. Really excited to talk about ageism today.
Brilliant. And of course, we're also joined by our very own Mary Cullen, Founder and Managing Director here at Insight HR. Hello, Mary. How are you?
Great. Good morning, Owen, and good morning, Melanie. Delighted to have you with us today.
Brilliant. So we'll jump right in, and I suppose I'll come to yourself first, Melanie, if that's all right. So look, there's some fantastic work going on across diversity, inclusion, anti-discrimination across, I suppose, a lot of different companies, a lot of different areas. However, I think it might be fair to say, and it's something we alluded to actually as we chatted before this podcast, is that we don't really see a ton around age or ageism. So I suppose, can you talk to us firstly about, I suppose, the importance of understanding and recognizing ageism?
Yeah, and I think a good place to start would even be to just define ageism for the folks listening. So ageism refers to how we think and feel and act toward people on the basis of their age. So what that means, we're talking about stereotypes and prejudice and ultimately discrimination in terms of how we act, not just as individuals, but also within our institutions. And ageism can be interpersonal. That's when you have an idea, a prejudice in your mind against a specific person. Maybe you are looking at kids on the street and thinking, oh, those reckless youth, or maybe you're thinking, okay, boomer, when you speak to someone who's older. It can be institutional. That's where you see things like mandatory retirement policies, people really being sort of pushed out of institutions as they age. And then it can also be self-directed. That's when you start thinking to yourself, I'm too old for this. Or you believe that you yourself maybe don't have maybe much to contribute as you are, as you're aging. So the way that we portray older people as a society can make us internalize these stereotypes and feel a certain way toward ourselves and toward our own aging process. And like any ism, racism, sexism, ableism, like any ism based in discrimination, we need to first recognize it before we can address it. So we do know that age is becoming a barrier in the workplace. We know that people start experiencing age discrimination around 45 years old in the hiring process and at work. But a lot of folks don't really even understand that ageism is an ism because of a lot of ageist attitudes, I think people think of as common sense. So you might think as you get older, your health declines. But that actually isn't always true. There are people of all ages with different health issues. And most people, as they age, have all of their faculties marshaled till the very end. So I think that that's a really important piece to start with, is just really beginning to wrangle with the concept of ageism and recognizing all of the places that we see it in our society, because it's very, very pervasive and it affects all of us. Age is the one thing that actually, hopefully we all get the opportunity to live to old age, but it is the one thing that cuts across all of the other demographics that we see in society.
Definitely. I think, I suppose, one thing we constantly talk about in this podcast is, I suppose, making a business case. I think a lot of HR teams struggle with making a business case for various initiatives, new strategies, that kind of thing. I suppose, can you talk to us a little bit about the business case for creating, I suppose, an age-friendly workplace?
Yes. And the statistics that I'll be sharing are from the AARP, which is the American Association of Retired Professionals. It's a huge retirement lobby group and services group in the United States, and also from the OECD. So just to be very clear, the information that I'm sharing is research that is already out there that is available to anyone. But both AARP and the OECD came out with reports in 2020 on our aging population and on longer working lives. So the OECD report came out on age-inclusive workforces, and that had some pretty very clear indicators about where we're headed in terms of a society with an ever-lengthening life expectancy. So I think a lot of people have heard that we are soon going to see a much bigger share of the population be over 65. So by 2041, over 65s are gonna be 20 to 25% of the population. And this is a huge opportunity. If we're thinking about all of the people who are part of our society who still have a lot to contribute, that's just a common sense. The bottom line is that it's common sense to be including people who want to be included in the workforce. But the OECD report also found some really more specific things that contribute to a business case. So for example, they found that the talents of older workers are very underutilized and very overlooked. They found that longer working lives would boost living standards substantially with a measurement of their measurement is a change in GDP per capita from an increase in labor market participation in workers over 50. So that's their cutoff is workers over 50. There's information about retention policies being able to save turnover costs, which I think every HR professional knows how expensive it is to constantly be onboarding and training new staff. And also found that workplaces with a higher share of older workers see increased productivity. And that comes from the positive spillover effect. So sharing experience from older workers to younger workers, but they did find that for every 10% share of older workers, there is a 1% increase in productivity. So there is a very clear business case for why it would be valuable to include older people in the workforce. But speaking on behalf of Age Action, our point of view is very much about older people being able to maintain choice and control in their own lives and to be able to continue participating in the workforce if that's what they want to be doing.
Fantastic. And I suppose then for us, Mary, is ageism, I suppose, something that we're seeing kind of appear in the market? Are there cases of ageism appearing in the courts, that kind of thing? Or if not, is, I suppose, the lack of, I suppose, are companies coming to us asking for advice? Or if not, is that maybe a reflection of the fact that not many companies are thinking about it? I suppose, is it reflecting the market from what we see?
Yeah, absolutely. I think ageism exists, you know, right across society, right across the workplace. And, you know, we see it most commonly when it comes to mandatory retirement age. So a lot of private sector employers have a mandatory retirement age in a contract of employment. And when it comes to trying to enforce that and retire people early, there can be quite a lot of case law in and around that area because, you know, the individual may feel that they're being discriminated against. So the WRC and the Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission have actually developed a code of practice for longer working. And in that code of practice, there is a requirement to objectively justify our retirement age. And in order to do that, a lot of HR people are confused by that. You know, what does the objective justification of a retirement age involve? It can involve the existence of a legitimate aim. Now, that's a bit vague, isn't it? What's a legitimate aim? And the means of achieving the aim are appropriate. So that gives us lots and lots of scope to retire people if we want to retire them. So examples of what might be a legitimate aim from an employer perspective and from a HR understanding could be something like intergenerational fairness. It could be health and safety. But remember, if you're going to rely on the grounds of health and safety to retire someone, you really need to be doing it in a safety critical occupation as opposed to widely right across organizations. Again, an objective justification might be about a balanced age structure at work, capability issues. Again, you have to be very careful when it comes to capability. There should always be medical reports. So if you're concerned about somebody's abilities or capabilities in the workplace, it really is something that you need to be doing, arranging an independent medical and engaging with the employee around those specific issues and succession planning. So there's quite a lot of ways in which an employer, if they choose to, can retire an individual. And there is a code of practice about how you go about that, how you engage with the individual, how those discussions should look. And if the individual wishes to, you know, extend and work beyond their retirement age, that they do, you know, put in writing 3 months before their retirement that that's what they wish to do. Now, there's been a pretty significant case in 2021 involving a woman called Theresa McCoy O'Grady against Sodexo Ireland Limited. And this particular individual was chief paid across from her employer in 2019. And prior to that, there had been a practice of extending beyond an individual's retirement age. In February 2020, she had a meeting and she was told that she was going to be retired on the 29th of March because she was well past the retirement age. And she took a claim to of unfair dismissal to the WRC, and she was successful in that claim, and the WRC adjudicator found that she had been unfairly dismissed. But because she had failed to mitigate her own losses by seeking alternative employment, the award was actually quite small, and she only received 4 weeks' pay. Had she taken that claim under the Employment Equality Acts, it is likely that the award would have been up to 2 years' salary. So you can see there how those kind of cases will influence what employers are willing to do. And that doesn't even begin to look at discrimination, really, within the workplace. If somebody's capable of working beyond the retirement age, why are employers hell-bent on retiring them? And it's something that we see over and over again. And I feel particularly passionate about this whole area in that, you know, does an age define your ability to meaningfully contribute to an organization? And I don't believe it does. And we'll be very much in agreement with Melanie on the points that she has raised. And it's something I think HR people just don't really, you know, consider enough when they come to their recruitment, their hiring practices, their culture, the organization. It's just not widespread enough in Ireland. I think that was a long answer to that question.
No, but it shows how much there is to it. No, absolutely. And I think I suppose building on that last point, Mary, I'll come to yourself for this one, Melanie. So as Mary kind of mentioned there, it does tend to be left out of D&I strategies. I suppose we can't make a claim that it's left out of all D&I strategies, but we get the sense that there could be more done there. So I suppose, Melanie, how does ageism kind of affect or influence ageist attitudes in the workplace? Is there a reason why it tends to be left out of D&I strategies?
I think that the main reason that age is left out of D&I strategies is because people really don't realize how pervasive and insidious ageism is. It's not a topic that we talk about a lot. It's only just now coming into mainstream conversation. And it's very hard to build something into a D&I strategy if you're not even aware of its existence. And it's also very difficult to, frankly, examine self-directed ageism. If you're going to begin to think about ageism, you are going to begin to reflect on how you feel about it yourself. And that comes with all kinds of uncomfortable feelings about reckoning with your own mortality. It's not a comfortable place to be. And I also think this is actually I'm piggybacking off of something that I heard Kim Chaplin from the Center for Aging Better in the UK say yesterday, that when executive staff and boards are looking at D&I strategies, they often are seeing age in their own groups, because oftentimes boards and executive staff do tend to be older in age than perhaps other members of staff or other levels of staff. But that doesn't really contribute to how older people are then included in all areas of an organization. It doesn't address opportunities for formal and informal training. And it also, it's important to realize that ageism goes both ways. Ageism isn't just about how we think about older people. It's how we think about anyone based on based on their age. So for that reason, a board may see itself as, you know, primarily between 50 and 70 years old, but perhaps there should be somebody younger on a board as well. So the age balance that Mary had mentioned there is important in both ways. But it's interesting too, because according to the Living, Learning, and Earning Longer initiative by the AARP, 83% of global executives recognize that a multi-generational workforce is key to business growth and success, but only 6% have implemented unbiased recruiting processes. And there's a similar report in 2018 from the Boston Consulting Group showing that over half of global executives don't include age in their D&I policies, even though 83% of them recognize that this multi-generational workforce is key to business growth. So it's an interesting question where we're not really sure exactly how much people are aware of the concept. We're not really sure of people's resources that they have to begin engaging with it in order to really recognize it and build something meaningful and substantial into their D&I policies. But we also know that people do have in the back of their minds that multi-generational workforces are valuable, but maybe just aren't really sure where to start.
Yeah, I think it's something that we are seeing appearing. I suppose there's good data appearing around these points. I think we've all seen the trend that's appearing there in multi-generational workforce. It does seem to be kind of being pushed up high in the agenda. And I suppose, Mary, there's also obviously the legal side to this as well. Obviously, you have it's one of the nine grounds under the Employment Equalities Act you mentioned earlier, the code of practice. But I suppose, Mary, a question for yourself is there adequate protections there from the employee side around kind of ageism?
You could say yes, you know, in that we have a code of practice on retirement, we have the Employment Equality Act, and age is specifically identified as one of the protected grounds. So yes, but if it involves litigation, you know, I think the organisation really has to be concerned about what it is they're doing, because if that's the only time when we look at our policies and procedures and decide to change them, then that's an issue. There are protections there for people. How aware are people of those protections? That's a whole different issue. And what does it involve for an individual when they come up against the might of an organization on something like retirement? Because remember, if you're requesting an extension to a mandatory retirement policy and being placed on a fixed term contract after your retirement age, which is typically 65 in Ireland, then it takes quite a bit to challenge that as an individual and progress all the way through the grievance procedure or the dignity at work procedure, and ultimately take a claim against the organisation after you're dismissed. Think about the impact on the individual at the end of their career. I personally have a problem with that, in that, you know, somebody has contributed for, you know, 40, 50 years of their life in the workplace, and then at the end of it get treated badly, you know, when they're still capable of contributing. Not in all cases, and there are, you know, situations where HR do need to step in because somebody's capability is an issue, and that may be, you know, I've certainly seen it in sectors like healthcare or nursing homes where somebody's struggling to do some of the manual work because of a particular illness or disability that is age related for them. However, those cases are few and far between, and those blanket kind of policies don't really serve an organization. And really, from an organizational perspective, you know, the things that HR need to be looking out for are, you know, their own unconscious bias when it comes to recruitment and selection, right in the first instance, and as well as those kind of unconscious or conscious biases that exist within the HR function at a senior and executive level, where somehow when it comes to diversity and inclusion, we're excluding age, but we're looking at other kind of issues, but we're excluding age. There is some work being done around the whole area of menopause, which is specific to women and aging. And you're seeing that whole area develop. And I do think organizations can go a little further now at this stage and think about age overall, not just in what becomes a hot topic or a trendy topic.
I'd like to jump in there, if that's all right, Owen. I think it's really interesting that you bring up organizations supporting people going through menopause, Mary, because something that we really try to promote at Age Action is the concept of aging as a lifelong process and not something that just happens to you one day out of the blue. And we're really interested in learning more about companies that will support their staff throughout the life course. So, for example, we've seen that menopause support recently. We have also been seeing things like bereavement leave for people who've experienced miscarriages. Of course, we've seen parental leave, but now we also want to look more at leave policies or flexible working policies for people in caring positions, which has to do not only with your own aging, but the aging of those around you. There are lots of people who at different stages in their lives are responsible for caring for perhaps their parents or their spouses, or even their children who, aside from just children needing to be reared, sometimes children need additional support up until their adulthood if they're born with a disability or something like that. So I think it's really interesting to think about all of the supports that you think could be useful to you throughout the life course. So in other words, if you think about aging as a lifelong process, where are you at different stages in your life and what type of working environment can really help you thrive and do your best and be flexible according to that? And it doesn't really need to be limited to older people. We are, of course, at Age Action focused on older people, but we are also recognizing that all of us are aging. Every day we're aging. I'm older than I was when I started the sentence, and I will be in a different position in 5 years from now than I am now. And it's really important to think about what kind of workforce we all would be comfortable aging in.
Yeah, and I think I suppose the perfect segue to my next question. And as we kind of promised on the December podcast, we're going to kind of look forward to 2022, because obviously a lot of HR teams are planning for 2022 and beyond. So I suppose my question for yourself, Mary, I suppose, what can HR teams do to kind of tackle ageism in their organizations? Should they kind of focus on things like recruitment and selection, as you said earlier, or is it a more wider thing than that, around kind of education, that kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and I probably bore our listeners by saying the same thing in virtually every podcast, which is, you know, in order to bring any initiative to life, you know, you've got to get your champions. So number one, HR need to find champions at the senior level who are passionate about and support a particular strand of diversity and inclusion. And we're seeing that happening quite successfully in many organizations, particularly since the whole Black Lives Matters campaign began a couple of years ago. So, you know, again, it's about, well, who might be passionate about this at the senior executive level, at the board level, that I can tap into and you know, get involved in a steering group, or you know, how can I pull together a working group? And then, and the working group again must be diverse in age, so that we're getting all different perspectives. It comes back down to awareness, education, training, you know, bringing it to life and having real conversations within the organization, as well as looking to HR themselves. You know, in many ways, we're the gatekeepers of the organization, in the sense that we're, you know, very heavily involved in recruitment and selection. At all levels. And, you know, there is a practice out there of HR people going through CVs, adding up the years, even if it's not written on the CV, and excluding people from a shortlist, or excluding people from interviews. And it starts right there. If we really want to do something about age in the workplace and create a more diverse workplace, well, then these are some of the things that we need to be looking at, and taking a good hard look at ourselves and saying, do I do that? Do we have a balance of ages within the organization?
Absolutely. And I suppose kind of same question to yourself then, Melanie. Is there any kind of guidance you could give, I suppose, adding on to what Mary said there, just about how teams can really kind of kick this off in the new year and beyond?
Yeah, so to be clear, Age Action, we don't consider ourselves experts on age-friendly workplaces. We believe that this is a conversation that needs to be had in the corporate sector, with folks sharing best practices and things that are working for them. What we can do is raise awareness about ageism. And Age Action runs a corporate social responsibility program annually called the Age Action Big Corporate Challenge, where BIG stands for Be Intergenerational, because intergenerational connection is one of the strongest antidotes to ageism and ageist attitudes. And the way that the program works is that corporates can join, and it is a fundraising program primarily, where they're sort of competing to raise the most funds for Age Action through intergenerational fundraising activities. But it's a mutually beneficial program, because in return, what corporate staff are getting is webinars on really understanding and recognizing ageism, Age Action's approach to combating ageism, and really thinking about aging through as a lifelong process. And then another one on perceptions of age in the workplace. So this is one way that we're raising awareness about ageism. And it's one small part of what the corporate sector can do to address ageism in their own workplaces. It's a very interactive program. It's a lot of fun. And it's a great entry point for corporates if you're not really sure where to start. And if you're interested in having a sort of safe space where you can ask questions, really begin to understand the concept of ageism, and also plug into what organizations that deal with age equality, like Age Action, are doing on the ground here in Ireland.
Brilliant. So it does sound like, I suppose, there's a lot of data coming. And I suppose, as you said at the top of the podcast, man, there's a lot of things from OECD, AARP, all those kind of things. So sort of good kind of data behind this is obviously best practices appearing now, as we see more companies deal with it. And as Mary kind of talked us through, there's obviously the legal foundation to this as well. And great to see that, I suppose, companies and not-for-profits like Age Action are also offering services around kind of educational and fundraising and that kind of stuff as well. So it's fantastic. And hopefully this is an issue that a lot of HR teams can really effectively, I suppose, tackle over next year and beyond. So thank you, Mary and Melanie, for a very insightful discussion. Thank you to everyone for listening. We'll catch you next week for the next installment of our podcast. So don't forget to click subscribe and join the discussion on our social media channels. Make sure to check the show notes for useful resources related to today's topic. And as always, for HR consultancy services and management you can trust, get in touch with us today at insidehr.ie. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Melanie.
Thanks so much, Owen.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room podcast, the podcast series from Inside HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insidehr.ie/podcast. That's www.insidehr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Inside HR. whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.